This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says the upcoming meeting of the JCPOA Joint Commission will discuss what measures should be taken before Tehran rolls back its nuclear commitments. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia voice support for Jordan's King Abdullah following security crackdown on Jordanian officials and royal family members. And U.S. officials tightened security at the capital following a deadly car ramming attack on a police checkpoint Friday. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Zajafic. Good to have you with us. Beginning with our top story, Iran's deputy foreign minister says that Tehran will hold no direct or indirect talks with the United States, and that's while the signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal are preparing to meet in Vienna on Tuesday.
Have no direct or indirect talks with the Americans in Vienna. We will hold negotiations with the Joint Commission of the Iran Nuclear Deal and we'll lay out our demands and conditions for a return to our nuclear deal commitments. Our demands and conditions are that the U.S. fulfill all its obligations under the JCPOA first by removing all sanctions it imposed on Iran. Then we will verify the sanctions removal and return to our commitments.
Narakshi made the comments after briefing the Iranian Parliament's National Security Commission on the upcoming talks. Former U.S. President Donald Trump exited the nuclear deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions. A year after the U.S. move, Iran took remedial measures to reduce its commitments. Tehran says its economic benefits under the accord are key to reversal of the nuclear steps that it has taken. Jordan's former crown princess is under house arrest as the authorities have detained several ranking officials over an alleged plot against King Abdullah.
I had a visit from the chief of the general staff of the Jordanian armed forces this morning, in which he informed me that I was not allowed to go out to communicate with people or to meet with them. Because that in the meetings that I had been present in, or...
In a video recording, Prince Hamza bin Hussein also said that his bodyguards and a number of friends were also detained. The prince, who's the king's half-brother, said that he was not part of any foreign conspiracy, but he denounced the ruling system as corrupt. The Jordanian military, in a statement, said that the prince was told to cease actions that would hurt the kingdom's security and stability. It also said that Hamza was part of a broader ongoing security investigation. A top former Jordanian royal aide was among those arrested. The U.S. and a number of Arab nations have voiced support for King Abdullah over the developments. Political commentator Michael Springman says that former Jordanian Crown Prince Hamza bin Hussein is likely to have been victimized due to his opposition to the corruption in his country.
The best I can get out of it is that the former Crown Prince, who's been confined to his house, apparently, was extremely critical of the old guard of corruption in the country, and he's met with a lot of resistance because of his criticisms, and that may well play into this. Jordan has been fairly stable as regards countries in the region, and it has been a key country for the United States in training terrorists and helping train American soldiers in the region. The monarchs of the region, and if you want to include Egypt and his the dictator Sisi, he's been supporting the king of Jordan, as well as has Bahrain, which is not exactly a bastion of democracy. So I think that they're all holding together in the hopes that if one falls, it won't lead to a domino effect and bring the rest of them down.
Israeli settlers have forced their way into Jerusalem's Flashpoint Al-Aqsa Mosque compound to celebrate a Jewish holiday. Palestinians have condemned it, calling that move provocative. Our correspondent Mona Kendil has the story.
Israeli settlers have escalated their daily raids into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds in the last couple of days during their celebrations of one of the Jewish holidays known as Passover. On Thursday alone, hundreds of Israeli settlers raided the holy site under the protection of Israeli forces, according to the Muslim religious authorities, or what's known as the Awqaf, which administrates the compound. Palestinian officials denounced what they described as provocative moves, saying that Israel has simultaneously banned Palestinian worshippers from entering the mosque.
The Israelis are accompanied and protected by soldiers and are allowed to raid the site and desecrate it. The Israeli forces closed the markets and the shops in the old town. A number of Palestinian youths were detained. It was another occupation of the Al-Aqsa complex and the old town, but this time by the settlers along with the soldiers.
Israeli settler groups have called on their supporters to converge on the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex in celebration of Passover, which began on March 27 and lasts until April 3. Thousands of Israeli soldiers were deployed across Jerusalem Al-Quds to provide a protection to settlers who toured in groups the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and took photos of several places. Other strict measures have also been taken on Friday to prevent Muslims reach the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Experts believe the incursions are part of Israel's policy to Judaize the holy site and expel the Palestinians out from the holy city.
The Israeli regime is escalating the situation in Jerusalem Al-Quds. It's only mounting tensions. The Israeli prime minister is facing internal problems and he's looking for ways to survive. He knows settlers will help him to do so. That is why he won't stop their acts. Therefore, the settlers are provided with a good opportunity to desecrate the site and provoke the Palestinians during their holidays.
Since its occupation of the Palestinian lands, Israel has been launching violent crackdown on Palestinians in different ways, especially when it serves Tel Aviv's interests. During the Jewish holidays, Israeli settlers escalate their raids into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Palestinians say the raids are provocative and pursue the policy of suppression by Israeli regime against the Palestinian people living in the holy city of Al-Quds. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Now, in other news, security has been tightened at a U.S. capital in Washington, D.C., following a deadly attack on a police checkpoint on Friday. Workers were seen installing high razor wire top fencing and additional concrete barriers around the premises. Now, that one day after one police officer was killed and another one was injured in a car ramming incident. The attack is the worst security threat at a capital since the January 6th deadly protests, when supporters of then-President Trump overran the complex. The violence left five people dead, including a police officer. Over to Europe, thousands of people have taken to the streets in the German city of Stuttgart to protest the government's handling of the coronavirus pandemic. Police say the demonstration was almost peaceful, but face mask requirements and social distancing rules were mostly ignored. However, authorities decided to let the demonstration go ahead. Last month, German officials announced the country would be placed in a strict Easter lockdown, but they withdrew the decision days later. According to Robert Koch Institute, the number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Germany has risen to more than 2,873,000. The tally shows that nearly 77,000 people have died of the virus. France has entered its third national lockdown as it is tackling a surge in cases of COVID-19. All the schools and non-essential stores will shut down for 4 weeks, and a curfew will be in place from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. From Tuesday, people will also need a valid reason to travel more than 10 kilometers from home. The new wave of the disease threatens to overwhelm the country's hospitals. France is currently battling a peak of around 5,000 COVID patients in intensive care units. On Friday, the country recorded 47,000 new cases and 304 deaths. The figures pushed a tally to 96,000 and total caseload to 4.7 million. In a move likely to stoke tensions with Russia, Ukraine saying it will hold joint military drills with NATO in a few months. We've discussed the topic with our guests in our news review program.
Ukraine's military says it will hold joint drills with NATO troops in a few months' time, a move which is likely to stoke tensions with Russia. The Ukrainian Armed Forces said drills will involve more than 1,000 military personnel from at least 5 NATO member states. And Russia has expressed the opposition to such a move, saying any deployment of NATO troops to Ukraine would lead to further tensions near Russia's borders. NATO has been against what it calls a big Russian military buildup near eastern Ukraine. This after Moscow warned that a serious escalation in the conflict in Ukraine's Donbas region could destroy Ukraine. And now joining us for this news review is John Bosnich, political analyst, joining us out of New York, and Mr. Jim Kavanaugh, founder of The Polemicist, joining us out of New York as well. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here, I guess. Jim, we'll start with you. Hope you're safe and doing well out there. This thing seems like it's getting out of hand, and it's a lot more serious, and there are a lot of players involved. The Germans involved, the French are involved, Washington is involved, Russia and Ukraine. It could turn out to be a mess. Your thoughts on this?
Yes, this is a very serious situation now, I think. You know, the Ukrainian President Zelensky signed a decree on March 24th, essentially committing to retaking Crimea and the city of Sevastopol from Russia. And, you know, he's being pushed very hard by the fascist groups who are, you know, not letting up at all. He came into power on the basis of, you know, mitigating a conflict with Russia, but it's gotten worse. So in response to that, the Russians are pouring troops into Crimea and on the borders of eastern Ukraine. They're not about to allow that to happen. Even in the context of the drill with NATO, Zelensky, said this is going to be, we're going to drill for defensive actions and we're going to drill for offensive actions to retake our territory in Crimea and Sevastopol. So it is a very high tension now. The 4 Ukrainian soldiers were killed in a conflict last week. The ceasefire has been declared pretty much dead by American commanders. And the Russians have said that NATO troops coming into Ukraine will be a disaster for Ukraine. Now, in terms of a temporary exercise, maybe, but any kind of stationing of NATO troops in Ukraine is not going to be accepted by the Russians. So the Ukrainians and the Americans have backed them on this, are determined to take back Crimea, and that is just not going to happen. The Russians are not going to allow that, and the tensions now are at a very high point, and somebody is going to have to back down, and it doesn't look like the Crimeans, the Ukrainians, or the Americans, and the NATO countries, as you say, that are involved with this, that they're putting themselves in danger, are looking to back down from this commitment to retake Crimea and Sevastopol, which is just a prescription for war with Russia.
Your initial thoughts on this, John?
Well, once again, we're entering into the Alice in Wonderland version of reality, which is standard NATO policy. First of all, any reference to so-called Ukraine's military is a misnomer. There is no such thing. It's a U.S. junta state placed in power, a U.S. junta regime placed in power through an illegal coup d'etat paid for by the American tax paupers, who had to pay $5 billion to stage a coup in a place that most Americans can't even find on the map. That's point one. Point number two, the Ukrainian military is replete, full of young men who've been drafted against their will and who surrender at the first combat with irregular forces in the Donbas region. I've personally sent from my own news agency in Eastern Europe 2 reporters to the region who've been on the front lines and have seen streams of Ukrainian troops coming over to surrender to avoid the battle. The idea of this rump state, rump pseudo state, in fact, taking back Crimea, which was actually Russian in the beginning, from Russia, is a bigger, let's say, NATO wet dream than Taiwan conquering mainland China. This is totally impossible. This is the, let's say, drug-influenced, it couldn't other be in any other way, drug-influenced dream of some crazy Dr. Strangelove kind of generals in the Pentagon. There is no chance. It's suicidal, and it's actually insane.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining us on the program. Pleasure to have you both. John Bosnich, political analyst, joining us out of New York, and Jim Kavanaugh, founder of thepolemicist.net, joining us out of New York as well. Gentlemen, stay safe, and thank you. That's a wrap for this segment of your News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Welcome back. Bulgarians are heading for the polls to elect a new parliament amid predictions of low turnout on coronavirus pandemic fears. More than 6.7 million Bulgarians are eligible to cast their ballots. Prime Minister Boyko Borisov's center-right party is tipped to finish first. Opinion polls, however, suggesting that a party in power for almost a decade will fall short of a majority. Its popularity has been eroded by a series of scandals, with protests last summer accusing the government of protecting oligarchs. Observers say that the party may struggle to build a stable coalition in a more fractured parliament. The election is being held as hospitals in the EU's poorest country are overwhelmed by COVID patients. Normal services in government hospitals in Nigeria have been affected following a nationwide strike by resident doctors. Najim Abdullahi has an update on the situation from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Most government hospitals have remained largely empty because of a nationwide strike action by resident doctors who constitute a large percentage of medical doctors in government hospitals in Nigeria. Consultancy rooms have remained empty because of the absence of medical doctors to attend to patients. Doctors' union officials said they are tired of the government failing to live up to its promises of settling their salaries and other benefits on time.
Now people are now saying we are neglecting our patients or this and that, but we are saying that our public should help us tell the government to do the needful. Pay me my money so that I'll be 100% mentally, spiritually, physically, and financially okay to be able to do my duty.
Representatives of the Nigerian government met with labor leaders behind closed doors in a last-minute effort to avert the strike. But apparently, the meeting ended in a deadlock. The government appealed to the doctors to consider the damage their withdrawal of services will cause to Nigeria's health system. But the resident doctors said the government should keep its several promises.
We have an agreement signed last year. Now they want to give us another agreement. Same thing. Now the resident doctor is saying that we don't want agreement again. We want implementation of that agreement.
This strike is coming at a challenging period, especially with the COVID-19 pandemic, with only about 800,000 Nigerians vaccinated in a country with a population of close to 200 million. Nigeria has 163,000 COVID-19 cases, out of which 2,038 people have died so far. The doctors' union said all the resident doctors at the COVID-19 centers have joined the strike and withdrew their services. This doctors' strike is in progress just when the Nigerian president, Muhammadu Buhari, is receiving treatment in a London hospital. According to union officials, close to 16,000 resident doctors are participating in this strike, which is indefinite. Most of the resident doctors are specialists who provide important healthcare services, especially in emergency wards. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
Nearly five decades after the Vietnam War ended, the toxins that the U.S. used during the battles continue to claim victims. Grudgingly admitting to spraying chemical agents in Laos, Washington has so far refused to provide compensation to those affected during the war. An estimated 3 million people have been killed in the Vietnam War, more than half of whom are said to have been civilians. The toxins that American troops sprayed on a vast expanse of land in Laos and Vietnam have been claiming victims to this day. More than 4 million Vietnamese were exposed to Agent Orange, 1 million of whom are reported to suffer severe health conditions. Even decades after the end of the war, children in the region are still born with severe deformities, that is. It took the U.S. years to only acknowledge the use of such chemicals during the war. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of law.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, April 4th, 2021. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are very important. Keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports, as you may know, are very important and very useful to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. And here, I truly appreciate those of our dear listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Aaron Teo from the Philippines, Harold Seuss from Austria, and Frank Dees from the Netherlands. Aaron, Harold, and Frank, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending us reception reports. And a zillion thanks to those of our dear listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails and letters. Yes. We have an email from Jayanta Chakrabarty, one of our regular listeners from India. We have an email from Arthur Fernandez, Lorella from Spain. I wish I'm right in pronouncing this name. From India again, we have an email from one of our regular listeners from Dildar Ahmad Lagari. Also, Nicolas Perrin from France has sent us an email. The last but not the least is an email from Manfred Manke from Germany. Manfred is one of our regular listeners who has sent us an email. Well, dear listeners, stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back with all these kind messages after the music. Welcome back. Here we have an email from India. This email is from Jayanta Chakrabarty, one of our regular listeners. Jayanta says, it was quite refreshing to get your beautiful mail after a long time during the pandemic. It's always a pleasure to receive messages from my favorite IRIB English radio station. Hope this letter finds you all in the best of health and spirits. My prayers go out to Allah to keep your team and, in fact, all the friendly Iranian people from harm's way. I really get disturbed and irritated when some world leaders like the U.S. president threaten the peace-loving people of Iran with the burden of sanctions, which really hurt and cause untold pressures on the common people. We in India are in the midst of the scourge of the deadly coronavirus pandemic. Through effective testing and quarantine, the number of affected people are being attended to. Number of positive cases are now beginning to decline. People are strictly maintaining social distancing in economic and social activities, and there has been compulsory wearing of face masks to control the spread of the disease. Hopefully, things are under control, though the country's economy and the GDP have been seriously affected. Government is trying its best efforts in recovering all sectors of the economy. I would request you to send me some Iranian postage stamps for collection, if it is feasible. First of all, salam and greetings to you, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our regular listeners. And here I do express my appreciation for sending us this email. This email was really encouraging and inspiring. IRIB English Radio also hopes to find you and your fellow countrymen and women in the best health and spirits. Jayanta Chakrabarty, as you wish the Iranian people and IRIB English Radio staff the best of health and spirits. Thank you very much for this wish, Jayanta Chakrabarty. And you also said you get disturbed and irritated when some world leaders like the U.S. president threaten the peace-loving people of Iran. Yes, but the Iranian nation is a nation which turns the sanctions and the threats into opportunities. Thank God. You also described the situation regarding the coronavirus pandemic in your country, in India, and you said you are in the midst of the scourge of the deadly coronavirus pandemic, but as you said, By strictly maintaining social distancing and wearing face masks, we can control the spread of the disease, and we hope that the corona disease be over very soon in the future in your country and all around the world. Yes. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, we wish you all the best, and I inform my colleagues about sending you the material you've requested, the postage stamps for your collection. Thanks a lot for sending us this really encouraging and inspiring email, Jayanta Chakrabarty. We wish you all the best. Stay safe and healthy, and write to us very soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. Here we have another email from India. This email is from Dildar Ahmed Lagari, one of our regular listeners, who says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, I hope that you all will be fine. We listen to your broadcast almost every day, and also we try to send you our reception reports. We request you to register our club information in your mail list so that we can keep in touch better. Thanks, best wishes." Salam and greetings to Delar Ahmed Lagari from India, one of our regular listeners. Delar Ahmed, that's a pleasure, that's an honor that you listen to our broadcast every day. Thanks a lot, and thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, also for sending reception reports. Of course, I inform my colleagues in IRIB English Radio to register your club information in our mail list so that they can keep in touch better. Dilar Ahmed Lagari from India, we wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Here we have an email from France. This email is from Nicolas Perrin. Nicolas says, "Hi, and thank you for your response to my email. I like to listen to your broadcasts and radio stations from foreign countries in general. I can imagine how lively and authentic they are and how much efforts are behind them for producing. Thank you, all the staff." First of all, salam and greetings, bonjour, Nicolas Perrin from France, and deep thanks to you for sending us this email. Yes, as you said, in order to produce a radio program, much effort is needed, which is really appreciated, and we in IRIB English Radio, of course, we do our best to produce the best quality of the programs, authentic, as you said. Yes, we know it as our duty to produce the most updated, authentic, lively programs for our dear listeners around the world. Anyway, Nicolas Perrin from France, thank you very much for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. So tell us your views about our broadcast. Tell us which programs you like the best in IRIB English Radio. Nicolas Perrin from France, write to us soon. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Wish you all the best. Also, from Spain, we have an email from Artur Fernandez Lorella from Spain. Artur Fernandez says, "Thank you very much for your message and informing about the QSL sent from your radio. I hope to receive one of them as a confirmation of my old reception report. Thank you in advance. You ask about the current situation in Spain. It is not good, certainly. We have still many cases and even deaths. There is a still lockdown in some regions. Let's see what will happen in the next days. I hope that the situation will get better in Iran. Have a nice week. Let me wish you all the best and stay healthy." Greetings to Artur Fernandez Lorella from Spain, and many thanks for sending us this email to IRIB English Radio. Yes, it seems that you received a QSL card from our radio. Of course, my colleagues are doing their best to send our dear listeners these QSL cards. Regarding your information about the situation in your country regarding the coronavirus pandemic, that's a pity. You said there are still many cases and even deaths. We hope that the situation regarding the coronavirus pandemic in your country, Spain, and also around the world gets better, and the disease be over very soon around the world. Anyway, Artur Fernandez, Lorella from Spain, stay safe and healthy. write to us soon. We wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Arturo Fernandez from Spain. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Stay with us. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Germany. This email is from Manfred Manke. Manfred Manke is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear sirs or madams, I had a great pleasure of receiving your radio, IRIB English radio, here in Germany. I've sent my reception information about my listening to your station, and I hope that this report would be helpful for you. To make sure that I have been listening to your station, I am enclosing an MP3 recording of my reception. I would be very happy if you could confirm that. It really was your radio I was listening to. Many thanks in advance and best regards." Greetings and salam to Manfred Manke from Germany, one of our regular listeners. And we are grateful to you for sending us this email, Manfred Manke from Germany. We are so happy that our signals are heard in your country and in your region. Manfred Manke from Germany, and thanks a lot for sending us reception information about listening to our station. Yes, of course, this report will be very helpful for my colleagues. Also, thank you very much for enclosing an MP3 recording of your reception. Of course, my colleagues will confirm your MP3 recording and your reception. Anyway, thanks a lot, Manfred Manke from Germany. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Manfred Manke from Germany. Dear listeners, time tells me that we have to skip to the next section of this week's listeners' special, which is interview. We hope you'll enjoy the interview.
Okay, my name is Ibrahima. Well, I finished from International Institute of Journalism here in Abuja. That is the headquarter of Nigeria. And also, I make a studies. I study in Germany, I study in France, and I study in some parts of African countries. I am not actually a journalist. I'm working with a radio station here in Kaduna. And I also send reports to so many other radio stations around the globe. Well, I must have my kind of job I do is that I have so many things I do, like I do take part-time lectures. I give to some of these part-time university, and I deliver lectures on French and German language as a part-time lecturer. And I have so many activities that I used to do. I'm a presenter in a radio station, and then so many other things. Well, the English service radio station, firstly, I must tell you the fact that I attach and I cherish, firstly, the style of the presentation that is coming up from the broadcaster. I first listen, it's my orientation that I have even at the Institute of Journalism. When I used to approach my lecturer on the style of news I used to hear from the English service, it's quite different from our own local radio station here. So I am adapted to the radio station, that is the Iran English service, because I learned too many things with them, and as such, I put it into my practice before I became a serious, a senior reporter here. So it really helped me because I listened to the style of the presentation first, and the presenters are always, I don't know how they organize their reporters, but it's something that I just discovered. I always learn something from their reporters, the style of the presentation, the way they organize the room. But I must have to say that I discover most of the news is basically Arab region reports and the news always within the region, and some parts from the Africa, little, but sometimes from Asia, little. But the much of the news is emphasizing mostly on the region of the Arab, most especially Iran. I must say I learned so many things from that radio station. I must say big thanks to them. I keep on listening because I benefited so many things from them so far. Big thanks go to all the listeners, fan clubs all over the world listening to International Radio of Iran. Big thanks to you, and I just want you to know that Iran Radio remains one of the untouchable and reliable, best information circulation, best in all time of news discovery, the first always to bring a breaking news, ready to give you all whatever I would. My best regards to all those listeners all over the world. I wish you the best, and I wish you keep listening to this best radio station. Best is what I give you, and the radio is ready to give you the best.
With the best wishes to our dear listeners around the world, we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Keep in touch with IRIB English Radio, and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Remove all sanctions is what Iran demands, and nothing less. This regarding the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that the United States left in 2018 unilaterally. Washington wants to talk to Tehran about the deal, but Iran says no talks are necessary. Iranian officials say that the U.S. can return to the deal without talks in the same way that it left without any talks and remove all sanctions on Iran.
Iran and the other signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, held virtual talks on Friday to discuss the fate of the agreement. During the meeting attended by China, Russia, France, Germany, and Britain, along with Iran, the signatories agreed to hold in-person talks in Vienna on Tuesday. That will be part of the meetings of the Joint Commission of the Nuclear Deal. Later, White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki claimed there will be indirect talks with Iran in Vienna.
These talks will be structured around working groups that the EU is going to form with the remaining partners in the JCPOA, including Iran. And the primary issues that will be discussed are the nuclear steps that Iran would need to take in order to return to compliance with the JCPOA, and the sanctions relief steps the United States would need to take in order to return to compliance.
But an informed Iranian source told Press TV that Tehran will hold no direct or indirect talks with Washington before it removes all anti-Iranian sanctions.
According to the immutable guidelines set out by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, any outcome of the joint JCPOA commission meeting, which is based on the notion of step-by-step removal of sanctions, is unacceptable. According to the guidelines by the leader, the Islamic Republic will only return to its JCPOA commitments after the removal of all U.S. sanctions and Iran's verification of the move. The Islamic Republic will not hold any mediated or unmediated talks with the U.S. before all sanctions are lifted. Just as the U.S. left the 2015 nuclear deal without negotiations and imposed sanctions on Iran, it should now remove all sanctions without talks.
Iran signed into the 2015 nuclear deal and committed itself to limiting its civilian nuclear program in exchange for removal of all nuclear-related sanctions against the country. That was meant to ensure Iran benefits economically from the accord, but those benefits were scarce and fully evaporated after the former U.S. administration withdrew from the agreement in 2018 and imposed unilateral sanctions against Iran. Analysts say all Iran is saying is that a once-negotiated deal does not need to be renegotiated.
The deal was the result of negotiations. So the negotiations have already taken place. The deal tells all sides what they're supposed to do. So the Americans know exactly what they're supposed to do. There's nothing to negotiate. If they want the deal to work, they have to implement it. But if they want to take bits and pieces and think that they can gain concessions from Iran, Iran is not going to do that.
Almost 3 months into the Biden administration, Washington is yet to right Donald Trump's wrongs on the nuclear deal. Tehran is clearly seeing through Washington's empty rhetoric and is calling for action. On Friday, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi told a virtual meeting on the nuclear deal that the remedial measures Iran took after the U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal are reversible, but only after the removal of all anti-Iran sanctions and its verification by Tehran.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, journalist and political commentator Mostafa Khoshchesh out of Tehran, and editor-in-chief of the International Interest, Sami Hamdi, out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off in Tehran with Mostafa. Now, the leader of Iran's revolution has said that there will be no talks with the U.S. and that all sanctions must be removed and verified that they have been removed before Iran increases its cooperation with the JCPOA. It seems very straightforward and quite simple. So your take on exactly what the U.S. is trying to do, it seems basically trying to complicate this very simple equation. Your take, Mostafa.
Hello, Marzia. Thanks for having me. Well, as a matter of fact, all throughout the past two decades, there have been deals between Iran and the United States or its European allies. In 2001, in 2003, and from 2003 to 2005, there have been multiple agreements. Also, the last one being the JCPOA. In all these agreements, first, the Americans or its European allies, they came to Iran and tried to build Tehran's trust that the United States and the West is looking for a conflict resolution And then they encouraged Tehran to join the talks, and there have been agreements. And in the words of Western officials and experts, Iran has always been loyal to its undertakings on their all these deals, because it has taken part in all these talks and agreements, believing that it's looking for a conflict resolution. It's been honest about its approach and nature and intention. But the other side has defied its undertakings in all these cases with no exception. The U.S. has never complied with its undertakings, mainly removing the sanctions. Why? Because it has never been looking for a conflict resolution approach. It's always been trying to contain Iran through talks. So talks rather seem to be a sham, a means, just a weapon to harness Iran, to receive concessions from Iran, and force Tehran to continue talks and agree with more and more concessions before any kind of sanctions is removed. So Tehran is just sending this simple message to the United States and its European allies that you may not take part in negotiations with Tehran while pointing a gun at its head. You are not honest if you just continue to use this weapon of choice, the sanctions, and then claim to be after diplomacy and talks at the same time.
Okay, therefore, stay with me, Mustafa. Stay with me, Mustafa. Let me get Sami in on this conversation. Sami, Press TV has been informed by high-ranking officials that there will be no direct or indirect talks with the United States when JCPOA signatories meet in Vienna next week, and there will be no step-by-step measures taken to re-implement the deal, as Washington is saying. However, American officials are saying the opposite. What do you think, in the middle of all this, that Washington is after?
I think that contrary to what's coming out, the statements from Tehran and from Washington that they are not talking to each other, Washington says it will not talk unless Iran comes to the deal, and Iran says it will not talk unless Washington comes to the deal. I think when you look beneath the announcements, the negotiations have already begun. Martin Griffiths went to Tehran at Linda King's request, the U.S. envoy, to Yemen to begin discussions on Yemen, and there are talks ongoing over how to split Yemen between the U.S. and Iranian influence. There are discussions already taking place with regards to Lebanon via the proxies Hezbollah and Michel Aoun between France, between Iran, and the U.S. is also involved in that. I think negotiations already taking place in terms of how to essentially find a framework within which to respect each other's spheres of influence, which is what the JCPOA's prime intention is supposed to be. It's not uniquely or specifically about Iran's nuclear capabilities. The second thing that's important to note is that the JCPOA was not necessarily a U.S.-Iran agreement. It was an Obama-Iran agreement. Obama bypassed Congress and passed the deals through executive order, which allowed Trump to unilaterally withdraw. Had Obama done it through the Congress, Trump would never have been able to unilaterally withdraw from the agreement, implying that Obama knew that Congress and the U.S. establishment were against this deal, and he steamrolled the JCPOA over the U.S., which essentially allowed Trump to withdraw from the deal. And the reason that Iran accepted the deal that Obama offered is because the terms of that deal that Obama offered was a recognition of Iranian superiority. It was a recognition that no decision in Baghdad can be taken without Tehran's permission. It was a promise from Obama that no decision can be taken in Yemen or Lebanon without Iran's permission. That's why Iran really wants to return to the JCPOA of 2015, because it is the ultimate recognition of years of outmaneuvering the U.S. in these regions and cementing this control. As one of the prominent Iranian advisors said, that Iran now controls four Arab capitals. The JCPOA was about cementing this Iranian influence and Iranian control. But nevertheless, I believe that negotiations now are ongoing. Biden realizes that he lacks leverage, that to talk to the Houthis, he needs to talk to Iran, that to talk to Baghdad, he needs to talk to Iran. And this is why I think the statements don't necessarily reflect reality. Okay. Iran wants to return to the JCPOA. Biden wants to return to the JCPOA. And what we're seeing is a war dance between the two to see how much can actually be extracted. Biden doesn't want to...
Let me get Mustafa back in on this. Stay with me, Sami. Stay with me, Sami. Stay with me. Let me get Mustafa back in on this. Mustafa, your take on what Sami has talked about, because basically what we're talking about right now is the JCPOA. And what Iran is saying is that, first, the United States needs to return to it, and, of course, take away all U.S. sanctions against Iran before there are any talks about anything else. Your take on what Sami has just mentioned?
No, of course, I do not believe that there is any kind of talks ongoing between the two sides. Griffith represented the United Nations, and as soon as he wants to represent the U.S. interests, he would not receive any response. You know, Iran has repeatedly stressed that it would not make any kind of decision for the regional nations. It's not Iran's policy and strategy. It has never been. Iran stresses, it has always stressed, that it respects the regional nations, and these are the Yemenis that should decide their fate. This is not Iran. Iran is a friend and ally of the Yemenis, of the Iraqis, of the Syrians, Lebanese, and others, and they could facilitate peace, and they have always been calling for peace, but they never order anyone because they do not see this to be the Iranian strategy. That's the first thing. Second of all, it's diminishing the reality on the ground to say that it was an Obama deal. It was not. Obama was the president of the United States, the world power, and in all these countries, president represents a nation. That's the leader. That's the top executive official and the number one official in the United States. They struck a deal when Biden was also his vice president. It was a deal between the United States and the world powers and Iran. It was not an Obama deal, actually. Another point is the very fact that the JCPOA focused on Iran's nuclear capabilities, certain parts of Iran's nuclear capabilities, namely fuel production or enrichment, for a maximum 10 years. 6 years is gone, 4 years is left. The U.S. should prove to be a trustworthy partner. The U.S. has never been a trustworthy partner back in the last 20 years, and they have already worked out a mechanism that I call charlatanism. It is called fortifying sanctions wall. They have done copy-pasting of nuclear-related sanctions under Donald Trump, put it in place in breach of the JCPOA, so that if one day the Biden administration proves honest, that's very unlikely, but if it happens, and if he remains loyal, unlike Obama, to remove the sanctions, not just over the paper, but in practice, if he removes the nuclear-related sanctions, again, Iranian economy and central bank would not be able to do any kind of business with Iran, because identical sanctions have been leveled against Iran under the pretext of terrorism, another layer under the pretext of missile industry, another layer under human rights, and so on and so forth. So this is a total breach of the JCPOA. They have worked out this mechanism in order to force Tehran to go to other agreements. This is a total breach. Iranian officials have repeatedly stressed all the sanctions imposed on Iran in the past 4 years should be removed only and only in return for Iran's nuclear undertakings, Iran's resumption of its nuclear undertakings under the JCPOA.
Okay.
The JCPOA has never mentioned anything about the region or Iran's missile power. It's been about nuclear capabilities.
Okay, stay with me, Mustafa. Stay with me, Mustafa. Let me turn back to London and get Sami back in on this. Now, Sami, if Washington wants to continue with the deal, why doesn't the U.S. simply rejoin the JCPOA, which it signed, and remove all sanctions as it had agreed to do when it signed the agreement years ago?
I think it's because of the regional dynamics. I think it's because of the discontent towards the U.S., not just from Iran, but also from U.S. allies, from the UAE, from Saudi Arabia, even from Israel, from Egypt, and throughout the region. There is a sense that these countries that were against the JCPOA initially and that essentially found a room to maneuver to pursue their own interests under Donald Trump, there is this lack of cooperation from these allies and the rise of China and Russia as genuine alternatives. And Biden is worried that he will come across as weak if he goes back to the deal in the conditions where we see Iran very powerful in Iraq, very powerful in Yemen, where the Houthis have managed to resist the Saudi campaign to restore the internationally recognized government, where Assad is on the verge of winning in Syria, and where